Welcome, guys, to Code's podcast number 8. Actually, I checked the ticker from last one.
Good.
We took a little break for a few weeks, and during that break, we probably did a little bit of journeys and learned some things and came back fresh for the new year, coming into the year of the dragon. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Alex Wolf.
Thanks, Ryan. Good to be here. Yeah, we sure did. It was a eventful couple weeks, so it's very fitting with today's theme.
Yeah, and I always get these insights every time we're talking. I get these like downloads of you know, I show up here, like I just told you, I don't know really what I'm gonna say. I have a plan, but I let it stream.
Yeah,
streaming's
good.
But yeah, I got some ideas. Today we're going to we like to put a title on things as an anchor to what we want to circle around and talk about, but it usually ends up connecting to all the things we talk about on the podcast. But today we're going to dive into what rite of passages. What is a rite of passage in all aspects, in learning in life, in, you know, the greater picture, the smaller picture, the smallest, you know, ant moving across the floor, but you know, rite of passage. So
yeah,
you've had some excitement to come on here too, Alex, since I told you this. So let's start with you. Like, tell me rite of passage.
Rite of passage. Yeah, what comes up for me is it's really the process on the way to success or failure, but it's mainly for rite of passage for me is, you know, it's a challenging situation. It's a challenging several months or several years, or it could be a journey that you go through, but then it's a struggle. There's a lot of challenges that come up through it. It's an adventure, but then you come out on the other side as a new man, you know, as a new version of yourself, and it's so worth it. And at first, when you told me about rite of passage, what immediately came up was, and this is just on a micro version, but it was our ayahuasca retreat last year was a bit of a rite of passage, you know, how it all came together. And then I remember, you know, we planned it for several months, and kudos to you, did a fantastic job planning it. And it was in Costa Rica, did a great job of setting it all up with the team and the tribe and the maestros and getting it all organized. And, you know, when he told me coming down, we're going to sit with ayahuasca in the jungle. And, you know, my imagination just went wild. I thought literally we were going to go sit in the middle of the jungle, you know, maybe in like tents or like build a tent or something and like literally sit outside in the jungle. And I was prepared for that. You know, I was really prepared to just go through whatever it was like this situation might be. And I fly to Costa Rica, I meet up with you and the guys, and it's great. And then we go on this long 7 or 8 hour drive into the deep of Costa Rica and into the jungle and these crazy dirt roads. And, you know, it's not very civilized down there. You know, it's still very much developing country. So that journey itself into the jungle was a bit of a rite of passage. And then we get there and we're like, okay, we're here. And like we ended up at this 5-star resort, you know, and it was literally like the best case scenario. And I was like, but this is where we're doing the ayahuasca. And you're like, yeah. I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. I literally imagined the worst case scenario that we were going to do. And it could have been, you know, raining in the jungle with bugs and animals and stuff like that. And so even just the getting there was a bit of a rite of passage, because it was just faced it all head on, and we got there and it was awesome. And then actually going into ceremony and sitting with ayahuasca was a rite of passage as well, because those nights were super intense and a lot of work, a lot of purging, a lot of anguish, a lot of facing all the shit that I didn't want to look at for years, or shit I didn't even know I had inside. And getting on the other side of that was literally like pure gold, you know? So that was like the most recent, well, maybe not the most recent, but the one of the most recent rite of passages that I feel I went through. And when you brought this up, I was like, oh yeah, that was a rite of passage that I could, you know, be happy to share about, because it was literally like a part of me died, you know? And it was, I think those parts of me had to die on the rite of passage to get to the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're all together sitting beside each other, and
that was the best
as a company and as friendship and everything. So one of the things I learned in my years of drinking ayahuasca and some of the times that I've gone up is like when kind of the ceremony starts before you show up, right? So you agree to it. It's a contract. It's an energetic contract. Okay, I'm going to show up. You know, and not everyone shows up. Some people kind of push out, but what this does is it stirs up the identity and it starts to stir up the fears inside you. And the biggest thing, if you tell anyone that's been drinking ayahuasca for a very long time and the people get nervous about going to drink, they say it's the fear. The fear is coming up. And fear is part of, you know, the rite of passage, because you have to recognize that fear for what it is and how it pulls you. And these things that ayahuasca is going to expose, these attachments, these things that are holding you back for a long time, or these identities that really lynch into like your unconscious choices and beliefs, they start talking to you. They start saying, no, don't go there. It's dangerous. You don't feel called to this, or all the bullshit that comes up. And part of the rite of passage is to step forward into that. And I've been on times where, you know, a really dear friend of mine that we've drank many times together, we're going up to Simona's, and I've talked about Simona. Simona holds a ayahuasca ceremony on her land, and she's helped so many people, and we love her dearly. And it's when you got to meet her. And we had this trip planned, and he had a friend, this girl that really wanted to drink ayahuasca. She was very much in, you know, the spiritual community and everything. She's like, I'm ready to go. And as you learned that the maestro that we use, Sean, is actually a real, you know, real deal.
He's, real deal, man. 100%.
He holds some very, very deep magic, you know, 25 years dedication. Didn't serve his first cup of medicine to somebody else until he had trained for 10 years under a master family, a master Kurandera family that goes all the way back to the Incas. You know, and that's how they train, and they do multiple dietas with master plants. And sometimes they have to sit in a dieta, which is, you know, you open a contract in ayahuasca with another master plant, whether it's a tree or a type of plant that's connected to a greater consciousness. And this consciousness stays with you for many, many months. There's no sex, there's no salt, there's no sugar, there's no violence. And you're just on this real diet working with these plants. But these plants are kind of the anchors and teachers that help the maestros work. And this is actually where the Icaros, the medicine songs come from, is the plants teach them. So anyways, it's a little tap into that. But back to the stories, we had a plan to go up, and it was in Canada, and we had to drive 14 hours, right? from Vancouver Island all the way up northern in the middle of nowhere in 160 acre in the middle of winter. And all of a sudden, these things came up. These fears came up in my friend. And the girl was like, I had a dream last night that we're going to die on our way up there. We're going to slip out and the car is going to go off the road. And he started bringing this fear around my friend. And then my friend started looking for things in his environment that supported that story. So the next day, he's like, my brakes are out. I should have changed them. That means that she was right. And this and that. And I'm like, no, it's like, we're going, I'm picking you up in an hour. You're not driving. You're coming with me. And just so convinced, she ended up not going because she had the dreams, and he came with me, and we drove 14 hours all the way up through snowstorms, through this, to the ayahuasca. And we drank for 3 days, and it was one of the, you know, one of those really profound things, and everything became clear then. And we got rewarded for that. But the during the trip, and I always would say, like, the rite of passage is the people you drive up there with for 14 hours, the things you think about and the things you go through and the things that try to stop you, the identities, and all of that gets shedded. You drink your first cup, and 10 minutes, 20, 30 minutes in, you're like, oh, that was just my identity holding me back, you know? So
totally.
That was kind of the idea that I organized last year, with that long 8 or 9 hour trip where I didn't tell you guys very much. You didn't know who you were meeting or where you were going. The whole time in the travels, you're like, I'm ready for the jungle and this and that. And well, the jungle was after you drank the cup, but I created a very soft, beautiful environment in a place of Costa Rica that's very hard to get because it's untouched, right? It's clean. So we got to go deeper because we, you know, we're in that environment. But the drive there, the journey there, we are drinking, and again, as a team and as a company, as a tribe, and, you know, 3-4 weeks, and the people are there, their identities are coming in right now. The energy's changing. The thoughts are coming in as usual. And organizing these things is, you know, it's an honor to be able to organize them. But I do have to, you know, it's
takes
talking
work,
to people,
yeah,
and bringing it in. But it's, you know, that rite of passage is like 10 years in one night, two nights, three nights, yeah. You know, and, I talked to our other partner the other day. He's like, I'm usually, you know, I've drank one night before. I was like, no, three nights is minimum, because it all becomes one ceremony, each piece of each night.
Totally.
Yeah. Sorry to go on there, but that's,
no, please. This is great.
That rite of passage is so special. And, you know, when it starts, it's like that muscle you build, that muscle of trust, the muscle of understanding grace and clarity and all the things that we've talked about up until now.
Mm-hmm.
As these identities come in, and as these fears come in, and as all of these things, you have a choice to separate and step outside of yourself into this observer state, into this present moment, and then re-enter, you know, whether it's like, am I going to trust things to unfold? Am I trusting that this is aligning? Is this, you know, 8 months ago, when a year ago, after I got through it, I felt like $1 million. I was clear. Things started to come together. I healed a lot of things. I remember that, you know, and I told myself then, I'm coming back in 1 year, and I'm going to go in again. And yes, through that year, we picked up a lot of stuff. We picked up a lot of
new
shit,
stuff,
new stuff that comes up. And then, you know, you're like, do I really want to do this again? You know, and you remember,
right.
But the resistance is not real, because do you remember a year ago after we got through it, we were so happy we did it.
So rewarded. Happy, so clear, so light, so tapped in, you know, to whatever, the magic or intuition. Yes, I remember very well. Felt so clear, so light. Like it was like, you know, for the listeners, it was like I lost 100 pounds of baggage, but like mental and emotional baggage, you know, and I was just so light and things were so clear. And I remember my interactions with people when I slowly integrated myself back here into society in Austin. But when I did, because I took my time with it, based on your advice, which was great, because I got to just spend some alone time and spend some good time in nature and just really tap into my intuition and myself. And when I finally started interacting with people, my conversations were just so on point, and I could just see right through people and see right through the bullshit and just be laser direct with the messages that were coming through. And I remember that some of those conversations was just very opening for the other people. I was just, you know, really tapping in with them and what they, and I was helping them on some certain stuff. So yeah, I remember the feeling, the clarity that came with it after, and the lightness, and yeah, I look forward to that again. I know it's going to be another rite of passage, but I truly look forward to it.
Yeah. And in that, it's interesting that, well, one of the rules I made for myself after drinking for 3-4 years now, is one thing I tell myself after the craziest nights, you know, and as you drink more ayahuasca, you get more knowledge, right? So you can start and drink and feel good and work on your stuff, but as you step deeper and deeper and deeper into the spirit world, there's more required of you, right? There's no longer this cycle of drinking and healing perpetually, like trying to find an edness when you're healed, because there's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
And ayahuasca has changed for me in different times and different stages and different places where I thought I knew everything. You know, when I first got into ayahuasca, I was drinking 2 cups, and I would go, you know, I want to go deeper and deeper, and like I was rocking it. And I got to a stage where I stepped into it a little bit further, and I got my ass kicked. I was now a new beginner when I thought I was good. And I stepped into the other ring of ayahuasca, and I was like, oh, fuck, you know? And then she gives you, ayahuasca, she's very special. She gives you, she's like a mother, right? And she gives you, you know, she pushes you, for me personally, she's pushed me right to the edge.
Yeah.
To where I had to pull on absolutely everything, to where there was this little spark of light. And I had to build up and find out of that. But through that is a birthing, right? It's a birthing and it's facing everything you have. And as you know, it's, you know, when you drink with a really experienced maestro that holds the dietas, it's not an easy task. You know, it's very challenging. But the birth of what you go through, that rite of passage, is what you've been desiring and looking for. And the opportunity to do that and be able to do that with the person in this incarnation, right? Because I don't know if many people know that ayahuasca has only been available for 40 or 50 years.
Yeah, go into that a bit, Ryan, because when I first heard that, I was shocked. And I think people are really, you know, misunderstanding like how the history of ayahuasca. Can you share a bit about that for the listeners?
From what my teacher, which we sit with, my ayahuasca teacher and dear friend, you know, he's taught that, you know, you go back 40 or 50 years and ayahuasca was only, it was only drank by the medicine men or the wisdom keepers. Like not even the other people of the tribe would be able to drink it. It was a secret. It was a secret very held by, you know, certain people that did the work and talked to the plants and everything. And people would come to them when they were sick or when they had bad energy or where they had something happen in their family. And the maestro or the ayahuasqueros would go and drink the medicine and get the answers. And then they would give the people the plants to heal them, or it would tell them what to do, or would change the energy for them. But it was held very sacredly and very, very secretly. Right. And about 40 or 50 years ago, I don't know the exact time, all of the families that have been drinking, and ayahuasca goes back thousands of years, but to be available for the regular person wasn't until 40 or 50 years ago. And all the families in South America, in Peru, in Colombia, in Brazil, all the master ayahuasqueros and wisdom keepers, they all got the same message from ayahuasca and said, the world is in trouble and it's time to open this medicine up to everybody, to the West. So ayahuasca is, as even though it goes back 1,000 years, it is expanding through us. And it's only been available for a long time, so it's still learning. And it's very special and honor to be, you know, be able to drink with, you know, people that are very experienced, because there is dark aspects to this medicine. You know, there is some things, and another rite of passage is you and I got to drive back with our maestro for 8 hours.
That was awesome.
And some of the things that he told us,
special.
You know, even me, but you had no idea even existed.
Oh, fuck.
You know, and it's not something I'm going to open up on this podcast, because I felt like we earned it. And I felt like many years in organizing, we earned to know about that aspect of ayahuasca. But you have to be careful who you drink with, you know, and you have to be careful where you go and how you approach it, but still honor it, you know, and there's a lot of stigma and fear, and that's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. If you choose to believe or have your experiences how you want to experience, I've changed my understanding of this medicine many, many times, to a point where I'm at now, where I drink to clean. I drink to face things inside me so that I can be better for my family, for my community, my work. And it's one of the things I want to bring up, because it's one of the things my teacher told me, the Incas, you know, the families in Peru go back thousands and thousands of years, and they learned from the laws of the Incas. And one of the very interesting and powerful laws is there's four laws, and there's four things that are very important to them. One is family. One is your work. Right. One is your community. Another one is ceremony. And usually when I ask people this, I say, what's the most important thing? They said family. Right. And the thing goes is how they think they hold ceremony as the most important thing in your life, the highest regardest thing, because if you have addictions, if you have depression, anxiety, all of these things, you know, you're no good for your family or your work or your community. Right. So they regard when you do ceremony, whether it be ayahuasca, whether it be taking time for meditation or looking at the things that you have, you have an opportunity to clean these things. You have an opportunity to face these things and correct these things, correct your addictions, your anxiety, your depression, your belief systems in ceremony. And then you're better for everything. You're better for your community, your work, your company, and your family, for your kids, you know? So it's an interesting thing that as we move into these ceremonies and how we show up as a tribe and a family, and we go into very difficult times as this rite of passage, we're not only doing it for ourselves. We're not only doing it for us. We're doing it for everyone around us and the things that we can bring into these insights and light and, you know, act from a place of love and grace and communication and trust, you know, mm-hmm. but it's the work that we chose to do. And that is a rite of passage, right? And, mm-hmm. and from that, you know, benefiting from seeing, you know, not showing up anxious or depressed and totally centered to your work, you get rewarded for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things come after the rite of passage. It gets hard first and the rewards come after, right?
Totally. Yeah, it's a definitely a process, and it's a process of struggling and learning how to embrace those struggles while it's a challenge. Like that's the code, or that's the key for me, is being in that struggling process and somehow embracing it or even celebrating it, like getting from, oh, this is, you know, not liking it to accepting it and then somehow embracing it and then celebrating it. Like, no, this is the qualifier. Like, this is what qualifies us at the end of the rite of passage. And then, like you said, Ryan, what's great about it is, yeah, we get to benefit from it, which is awesome, but it also ripples out, right? It ripples mm-hmm. out to our family and friends and team. And it's this ripple effect. And then we've somehow just like up leveled into a new level of consciousness or understanding. And now we're at a different level in the game, right? Like we always talk about, like, it doesn't get easier. We just get better. It actually gets harder. I find life probably gets harder, but we're just keep up leveling. And these rite of passages are so valuable for that. And so grateful to be having the one that we did and the one that we're going on. I remember the first time I was introduced to the concept of a rite of passage. Like I didn't even really know what this was. Up until the first time I went on another plant medicine theme here, but when I first went to Peru with Jeff, and we'd already done a ceremony, but you know, it was not as intense as or as much work as the one that we did last year. But the rite of passage was brought up when we went to these old temples, Inca temples in Peru in the Sacred Valley. And they were set up and our guide was telling us the story that, you know, the young men, like these, you know, whatever they were, 14 or 15 year old boys, would get sent to the temple and they would be told that night they would either die or turn into a warrior, you know, and they were going to face death. And if they didn't die, they would come out the other side as a man and as a warrior and ready to, you know, be a man in the tribe. And then they could be considered a warrior and fight with the rest of the grown men. So these young boys would go to the temple and there would be, you know, nights where it's raining and all this kind of stuff. And they'd be in total darkness for the entire night. And the temples were set up to, like, you know, basically scare the shit out of these young boys. And they would go there literally thinking they were going to die. And the whole temple was constructed like that, like almost like a haunted house. But it was designed so at the end, when the morning sun would rise up, it would come through this hole in the temple and, you know, basically hit the young boy in the face. And he would realize, wow, I didn't die. You know, I made it. And now he went through this rite of passage. And then he would walk all the way back to his tribe and feel like a man for the first time, because he went through this rite of passage and faced death. And I was like, wow, that's such a, you know, it's so powerful. And we had nothing like this in our Western society. Yeah. Like, you know, so it was like, it was cool to see these ancient tribes. They really, there was a lot of thought and intention and methodology of how important these rite of passages were to turn these boys into men. So that was mm-hmm. my first introduction to rite of passage. So that also came up when you brought up this code.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, if you go back long enough, and his story, we bring it up a lot, his story, right? Mm-hmm. So our rite of passage right now, which is supposed to be, is we go to a hospital. You know, we're born, right? The doctor separates the baby, you know, cuts the umbilical cord, washes it off, you know, tags it, gives it a certificate, you know, mm-hmm. and then sends it in to learn how to work from 9 to 5. with all this noise.
Yeah.
And you think you go back to, you know, Sacred Valley or the Incas or the Vikings or all of these tribes before, and we don't really know if the history is correct, but just from my, you know, my own personal looking into things and everything is, you know, rite of passage was very strong for young men, you know, and boys back in the day, and they got to learn the tools. And I think one of the biggest tools is to go into this very scary place and then see the sunrise. One of the tools is you realize like how much your mind lies to you and how much fear never serves you.
Right.
You know, and that's a really big lesson because we are taught and programmed quite a bit from our current society and to obviously blame others, put our power away from ourselves, right? And then fear. There's fear everywhere you look, you know, the news, this and that. And fear takes your power away.
Yeah.
And if you can get over fear and you can practice to get over fear and remember, and getting over fear is not just this simple choice where, hey, I'm not going to be scared of this. It's literally a rite of passage of stepping into what, to the unknown of what you're scared about and facing it. You know, there's danger. Obviously, there's danger where you're not just going to, if you go and do something dangerous, you know, that's lack of awareness. But you have to face your fears always in life. And I think that's one of the biggest rite of passages and one of the things you have to learn and remember to learn, because as we come out of our ayahuasca ceremony, and to the thing I think I missed my point is, like, after I go through my ayahuasca, I always tell myself one rule after. I said, show up and drink. Just show up and drink. That's it. And that's one thing that always resonates, no matter how hard it is. And I've had some very difficult nights to where I'm just light up a mapacho after, and you just, oh, that was a good one. You know, I purged out some entity squid looking thing, last night that was like tickling my mind to make these weird choices in my life that kept me away from things. And you just kind of like, you know, you feel the lightness, but you just tell yourself, show up and drink. But then it's funny how the fear builds up over the year, you know, and it's like the nervousness, and it clouds your mind from tapping into that strength and tapping into that. So there's always work and there's always going to be rite of passage. But the more you kind of forget those rules, and the more you go out of, we talked about discipline, right? Spiritual discipline, right? Is a thing too. There's physical discipline, you know, there's health discipline, but spiritual discipline, the more you kind of get off the path, and from when you're very clean, the more you make the choices that don't serve you unconsciously, you start to bring in those fears throughout the year, right? And then we have the opportunity to go and face them, and they all come up. But yeah, like rite of passage, I know you've got some stories for today. I've got a couple myself, but your stories are great, Alex. You know, and I'd love
to
bring one up and throw the ball back at you.
Of course. No, I love it. Everything you're saying is spot on for me. Is it's all of these rite of passages are they're challenging situations that, you know, that's what makes us, you know, it's like, it's what makes the whole thing fun. And yeah, the fear aspect of it, it sucks, but it once you realize the fear doesn't serve you and you could just embrace the suck, you know, embrace the challenge. It's a different mindset, you know, like I think that's where the code is just being like somehow finding a way to enjoy it. Like I remember when, you know, our maestro said, like, don't forget to smile, right? When you're puking. Yeah. And that's the trick is like, I remember, man, it's like one of those nights was probably one of the toughest things I've ever went through in my entire life. Like just the mind games that ayahuasca was, you know, getting me to play on myself. It was so challenging. But then I just remember like, you're in the game, you know, and just, you just, once you realize you're in the game, you just got to laugh and smile. Cause it's still all the game. Mm-hmm. What was coming up for me was, I got a couple stories, but what was coming up for me was when I first came to Austin, I was driving, you know, on these country roads, beautiful hill country. And I came across two buffalo, two big buffaloes. And I was like, oh, so cool. I stopped and I got out and actually petted one on the head and had this moment where I really connected with the buffalo spirit and the buffalo energy. And that became my spirit animal for that year coming to Austin. And the reason, and then as I learned more about the buffalo, buffalo is the only animal that runs into the storm, you know, like they see storm clouds coming, and where regular cattle will go the other way, the buffalo will actually charge towards the storm, and they I'm guessing they kind of love it, you know, and that's where the that's where that mentality, that attitude and that spirit comes up for me in the buffalo is like, yeah, no, you see the challenge, you see the obstacle, and you just go right towards it. And in the storm, you know, you're not made despite the storm. Like the buffalo is not made despite the storm. He's made because of the storm. Like that's where his strength lies, is by actually forging his way. Yeah. And that's where, you know, that's where that came up for me with rite of passage, is like, just embrace that buffalo spirit. Look the storm right in the eye and just go through it. And there's so much freedom inside of that. There's so much power. And yeah, I just encourage anybody listening to just, you know, just go into it. It's such a better way to live than being afraid of what's going to happen, and doubt and self-doubt and anxiety and all this stuff. Is just go right into it. And the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to fail, and that's okay. But it's definitely, you know, everybody fails, but it's definitely better than not trying. It's definitely better than going the other way from the storm and trying to get around the storm, and just go right in, and you'll get through it, and you'll actually be glad that you did. So yeah, I look forward to these rite of passages now. I've totally, you know, changed my mindset around it and embraced it.
Definitely a muscle.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's evolution, right? And you know, I very much like cats and jaguars and snow leopards and everything. But yes, being able to, like you said, like the buffalo is what it is because of what made it. The storms made it.
Yes, exactly.
With these cats, the jaguar, and I think some of the cats here, like jaguars and snow leopards and everything, it's interesting. They kill for fun sometimes. Like you see a jaguar with a boar, and it will just play with it. And you know, cats, they'll kill mice and they'll just play with it. And I had a cat in Canada that would bring me bats and snakes and everything as gifts. And it brought me a little rabbit once, and it broke its leg, and it just, so it couldn't run away, and it played with it, you know. And I'm getting a little, you know, trigger people about cats killing things and everything, but guess what? But it's nature.
It's nature. Yeah.
And people think nature is this loving thing. I want to be one with nature and do all this. Yes. But nature, you know, if you go deep enough into the jungle, a jaguar will play with you while you're alive. You know, if it catches you, a snake will bite you. And, you know, the place that we go to and drink ayahuasca at night, we have to use a flashlight because there's many snakes, you know? And this is the range of life, and it's the truth of life, you know? So when we walk the path and we connect to nature, we need to listen, you know, we need the feedback, we need to sense, we need to hear, we need to speak to nature as well, and not just go into danger. But one of the things is, cats are masters. They're masterful beings, you know? And one of the things that I bring up is the snow leopard. And the snow leopard is such a fascinating animal to me. And these are all teachers, the eagle, blow. And we can call upon these masters, not by a persona saying, Mr. Buffalo, can you help me have strength? Say, like, what made the buffalo? What it is? And why it is such an amazing animal that I can learn from is because of the characteristics that was made around it. What makes a snow leopard? You know, the snow leopards are very interesting because their environment is very, very small. They're a very small environment. And, you know, they have to conserve their energy so much because there's not very much food around them for them. You know, and if they miss more than one or two or three kills, they don't have enough energy to kill something, you know, and they die. So every step that they take is calculated. And the only way they can do that is without thought. It's through sensing the feedback, sensing and using their whiskers and all of their intuition that made them who they are. And they meet a mate maybe one time in their entire life cycle, you know, yet the snow leopards are there, and their biggest threat is humans. You know, it's not, they thrive.
Nature.
And to call upon these animals, sometimes, you know, you get into a rite of passage where you don't know left or right or center, and it's cloudy and there's not much around. And you know, I've called in on the snow leopard to just tune in, to observe, to listen, to take one step at a time, to be so in tune with my body and my energy and where I put my force and attention, that starts to compound. And I've used this in ayahuasca, you know, and ayahuasca has put me in these times. And ayahuasca is interesting. It's almost like the matrix, the white room in the matrix, you know. It's like we have all these challenges in life. And she allows us to go in to these like multiple rite of passages that are really important for us. And we create them as we are. And the only way out is through. The only way out, and you know, to call upon these, you know, call upon the buffalo, call upon the snow leopard, call upon the jaguar to come in, and call upon the eagle or the hawk to come in. And by tuning into their evolutionary strength, you're able to, like, they become teachers. They become totems of,
yes.
You know, this is why you go back to like ancient Rome. You know, what do they use? They use a big eagle. You know, why are these eagles and jaguars? They're totems of strength because of who they are in their evolutionary process. And, you know, they got through it through their multiple years of evolutionary rite of passage, and the benefits, you know, of being these totems of earth.
These ancient wisdom within these animal spirits that you can tap into is so cool, so profound. And something that I've so graciously got to experience over the past couple of years, like, so freaking cool, man. Thank you for that, Ryan. There's some really good golden nuggets in that. I wanted to ask you how, you know, for the listeners at home that maybe haven't went on a rite of passage, you know, in the plant medicine space, or maybe they're starting to connect the dots on certain rite of passages that they've done in their life. That was a rite of passage. How does one know, or how does one realize when they're in a rite of passage? Mm. What's a good indicator, you know, that you can share with someone?
Well, I would say there's many, many ranges of rite of passage. It's just something that we call it. Being aware of the rite of passage, most people are aware of the rite of the passage after they've gone through it, you know?
Right.
And
yes,
if you are keen to, you know, move on your path, and you're keen to move out of comfort and understand that there's more, you know, there's different layers of success, rite of passage. If you can almost say these are video game levels or soul contracts, right? So the soul is going to put you through many rite of passages, right? Mm-hmm. And the soul knows better than you. You are an identity, a personality, right? An embodied consciousness, but we have a driver, and we've talked about this. There's a video game, there's a player, and there's a video game character. So as you have these contracts or these templates, you know, your rite of passage might be to go through many, many relationships, you know, romantic relationships, until you embody worthiness or until you embody trust. And these are rite of passage, and they come with, you know, many things of fear, you know, fear of being left or abandoned. And we might have had an abandonment template put on us through our mother, through many generations, or worthiness aspect. And most people don't have tools, you know, they'll go through the rite of passage blindly for many, many times. And this is where we
right.
word of like being able to respond versus being able to react. And the word react is very interesting, because you're reacting that drama over and over again as the same rite of passage that's being brought to you. And what happens is, if you ignore that rite of passage, or you don't actually know you're going through it enough, it's going to build up and coalesce more and more energy that's going to keep attracting these reactions to bigger polarities, right? There's going to be more polarity because you're asking to learn this, and your rite of passage is going to get harder and harder and harder until you actually pull through and learn that this is what I need to embody to make it through this. So you're almost forced to tap into your source, forced to tap into what you need and learn this. So whether I think the next stage of evolution or the next stage of spiritual growth is being aware when you're going through it and still going through it.
Yeah. You know,
understanding that there's this showed up for a reason, and like starting to notice and observe that, you know, there's something underlying that I desire here that I might not be aware of. And I need to find the breadcrumbs as I go through this to understand that I desire to embody this success, as you would say, you go through the rite of passage. So you go through enough relationships. I mean, personally, I can speak that, you know, since I was young, I went through many relationships. I've had heartbreak. I've been, you know, all kinds of different characters in relationships myself, you know, and
that you've been
Yeah, well, you learn from the first character. You know, when you're young and you have your first girlfriend and everything, and you kind of like you think a certain way, you know, because
Yeah, of course.
who taught you is your parents, right? And movies.
Yeah.
And I think
Programming.
that's it's such a big psyop because there's times, you know, I didn't notice this until later where you watch a movie and it goes a certain way and it's a certain type of programming, literally right back from the Disney movies, you know, where they program in like loss of mother or abandonment or all of these things with like Bambi's mother dying or a father dying in Lion King. And this actually sticks in you for a long time. And this plays out unconsciously, and you get into relationships, and something doesn't happen the way that you saw it on a movie or a show, and you're confused. And there's been times where I was younger where I was like, what do I do next? I can't look to my parents, but I remember this movie where this happened, and it happened this way, and it was nice or it wasn't nice. And you can only go back to those experiences, and you don't have the tools or the growth as a young boy. Not everybody, some people do, some people have worse, and that's part of the template to actually understand. So you go, I think a relationship should be this way. And I have a
That's right.
desire to, you know, feel worthiness, right? But I feel like, okay, I have a very attractive girlfriend. That means I'm worthy to everyone, right? And then when that attractive girlfriend might not work out, right? And then you have this experience, right, where you understand like after you go through a breakup and a movement of that, you become something new. You learn a piece of it, but if you haven't realized that that was the lesson or closer to the breadcrumbs of the lesson, you're going to attract another, you know, different react, you know, a different thing. And
Yeah,
through each
same
one
pattern.
over many, many years, you know, not everyone gets it. The more you start to observe and go through the heartbreak and go through the experiences and go through the lessons of like, I'm not going to do this next time. You start to change each time. Obviously, from every relationship, you change a little bit. So, like, you know, 7 years I've been married with my wife. You know, we brought a child in, and that to me seems like a success. But I had to go through many, many rite of passage, and so did she with her relationships, you know, up until now. And you know, we got to create a life from being together for 7 years. We got to birth in a life, which seems like the being a father is a goddamn rite of passage, I'll tell you that, man. It's like, oh my
I
God, it's that's you know, I've jumped off cliffs, I've base jumped. That was a big rite of passage. I watched somebody die in front of me, in Norway and in Trøndelag. And
Wow.
I don't know if I've told that story. That's one of the stories I do want to tell today, because that was
Sure.
a major rite of passage. But you know, you could look at everything as a rite of passage, and then you could put like a scale on, you know, do you want to take your rite of passage for 10 years? Right? Do you have the tools to understand that you've attracted whatever event into your life to have a deeper desire to get through to the other side? You know, do you want to? Do you want to live in fear? Do you want to avoid it and keep attracting things and live in your head? Or are you ready to step into it, as you say? Are you ready to go into it? And there's not going to be an exact probability that you're walking into. You have to take the first step into the fear in order to change the trajectory of that probability. And you need, unless you step into it, unless you step into your rite of passage, you don't know anything. You don't know the feedback, the new feedback that's going to come. Right? It's like you have to take action, and it doesn't need to be a big action, but you need to take a step into the unknown in order to learn the next step. You need
That's
that feedback. And you know, some people like to, you know, I need to it needs I have this problem, I have this intention, right? Intention is an interesting word, because if you stay there too long, your intention, right? Your tension. You have to release that intention and take that first step and get that feedback. Because when you go into ayahuasca, when you go into life, when you go into relationship, you have an idea of how it might be based on your identity or your perspective at that point. You only know what you know from that limited perspective. Once you go into that relationship, once you go into that business, once you go into that ayahuasca ceremony, it unfolds unpredictably into something you didn't think you were going to experience, and it became this, you know, discovery, an exploration of learning about yourself. And the result
Totally.
was different than when you first went in there, right? So understanding and practicing that is that I'm going to get to this point, but until I take action, until I release that energy, until I step into it, you know, I'm not going to change the trajectory. I'm not going to learn this rite of passage. I need to, you know, go into it. So, you know, almost everything is a rite of passage in the contrast of life.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful process. And just most recently, like, I went through a rite of passage with pickleball. You know, like I got my ass kicked so many times in pickleball, you know, and, you know, I was a athlete pretty much my whole young manhood. So like, I'm an athletic guy, I'm 6'4", I'm in good shape, I have good cardio. I played racket sports before, and I remember showing up at the gym and like, I'm playing against retirees and old tech nerds and like 60-year-old ladies, and I was losing every game. Like I lost so many games. It was unbelievable. I never lost so many games of anything consecutively like that in my life. You know, like there was probably times where like I'd go a week without winning a game, you know, and sometimes I'm just paired up with not the right partner, but the common denominator was me in all humility. But it was a real rite of passage because I just stuck with it. I just kept playing and kept playing. And no matter what, I was just like, I just found the fun in it. And I found the techniques and I found just ways to practice and practice and practice. And now like, I'm loving it. I'm crushing it. And I'm getting my revenge on all these old people and these tech nerds, and that they're great people. But it's just, I'm so glad I stuck with it because it just brings me so much joy. I'm just able to like be in that mode of play for a couple hours a day and get so in the, what I love about pickleball is just like, you have to be really present because the balls, you know, it's happening really, really fast and people are good and every shot counts. So it brings you into that flow state really quickly. And it's a really back and forth and it's just so fun. And I'm so glad I stuck with it and didn't, you know, quit because now that I've made it through and I gotta admit, I'm probably at least in the top 10, definitely in the top 10, maybe in the top 5 of all the players there. It was a rite of passage because I really got humbled and I just, it sucked, but I just kept showing up and I kept practicing and I kept playing. And now that I'm on the other side of it, I'm crushing it. I'm like, oh man, I'm so glad I stuck with it. So just a more, you know, recent, lighter version of a rite of passage, but it definitely was. And now I get so much joy from it. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. And that's interesting. The process there, if we actually take apart that process, and this was like me in tennis and in learning tennis is, we've talked about this before, but you know, as you get into something new in pickleball, you're surrounded by people that have been playing it for a long time and, you know, you make a bad shot, you know, and how long do you hold that?
Yes.
You know, it's like, and how embarrassed are you when you're saying like, well, these 60-year-old women are beating me and I can't even do this. And you have the doubt and worthiness and all of this.
Totally.
They come up and you get better at how long are you holding that and how long are you correcting? And then there's an overshot, right? Bingo. There's one where you just like, you get excited, you make a good shot and the ball comes back and you go to spike it, or I don't know how it is in pickleball.
Yeah,
and
smash it.
Kill
yeah.
it, right? Yeah. And it moves to the grip of your hand. Right. Yeah. I know tennis, you want like a 4 out of 10 grip on the paddle. I'm not sure in pickleball, but like if you have too much, you know, if the ego gets stroked too much because you made a good one, and you really want to hit it, you grip harder. Right. And what that does is it sends too much force through the ball. So you're actually moving too much force.
Yes.
So in the process of rite of passage and in the process of learning a new skill, you're learning how to apply attention and force in a specific way. You're also learning how to understand feedback without capturing it in the mind and making it, you know, deepening the guilt or worthiness or aspects that you didn't, or the embarrassment or the ego, but you're actually learning to work with your identity and the ego and get into a more present state and be able to execute with the proper amount of force, right?
Yes.
That's needed in life. And, you know, that's a big lesson. And that's why you see a lot of people that have mastered something have a lot of success in life as well, because they know how much force and pace to apply to business and relationships and patience and everything, right? So it's always translated. So the more you go through a rite of passage, the more you can actually take those gems and lessons of fear and apply them to everything around in life, and also be a beacon or a host of these lessons. You know, it's like, I mean, the story, I had a big rite of passage in Norway, you know, when I got into base jumping. I think I've talked about this on previous podcasts for my crash in Panama. But, you know, base was something I really wanted to get into. How I got into it, a person showed me a video of this girl jumping off the fjords in Norway. And I remember her talking, and it didn't sound crazy to me. She sounded so grounded and so free and so confident and so courageous in her energy as she talked about it. I was like, wow, I'm really attracted to that. And first thing I said, I can do that. Right. So I started my journey. I started skydiving. I got my first 125 jumps in my first year, or my first 4 months, 125 jumps. And then I went to train for base jumping at the bridge in Prine Bridge. And I started base jumping off a bridge. I worked with some of the best teachers in the industry to move up. And it's interesting, a year after I started training base jumping, I ended up in Norway on the same cliff that I saw this video. And by then I had about 376 skydives, and I had about the minimum amount of base jumps, which was 40. And, you know, you prepare very much, and you go walk to the edge of this fjord, and you have to climb up it. So the whole time, like, I'm excited. I made it there. I'm ready. You know, I did all this training, and you climb up for about two and a half hours to the top of Shrog. And the first one we start on is exit 6, I believe, if I remember. And, you know, I'm usually one that goes first, right? I like to go, you know, I'll take the lead and I'll go first, but I wanted to watch because it's more than just jumping. There's wind, there's weather, and the wind that day was very, very high, right? It was 25 to 30, which is the edge where it pushes the parachute back a little bit. And, you know, jumping off a 1,000-meter cliff, you know, it's nice because after about 8 seconds, you get terminal velocity. It means that you can use the airspeed to direct your body and fly away further from the cliff. So when you open your parachute, you're not close to any objects to strike. But then you look down, and the landing area is very interesting. It's a bunch of boulders the size of like buses and cars and spiky things. And then there's the ocean that the fjord comes in. So you have to be very aware to know, yes, jump off the cliff. Oh, your parachute opens, and then you have to be able to navigate and land, and break your legs or anything, or not hit a cliff, or because it, you know, there's dangers everywhere. So it makes you focus. But I trained for it. I was ready for it, and it's something that I had to, like, I was fully tested, because when you finally walk to that edge, I tell you, like, it's not a human thing to jump off a cliff. And I know that most of the listeners, you've hiked, right?
Yeah.
You've hiked.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been on a mountain and you've probably hiked, you know, imagine like going to the edge and then jumping off. You know, it never becomes normal to anybody. Even guys that are doing it like 10,000 times, 5,000 times, it's still a muscle and a trust that you have to build. Mm-hmm. And on that edge, every single thought in my brain came to me not to do it. Every single one. My instincts were coming in, and it was like, do it tomorrow. The wind's not good today. You know, it's like, are you sure you're ready for this? Maybe it's not calling you. You know, you don't have to jump. What if you die? What if your parachute doesn't open? What if you hit this? Mm-hmm. Every 1,000 things, and like, strong, right?
Yeah.
The adrenaline's pumping, you know? And I told my teacher that I went there. It's like, the adrenaline's pumping. He's like, oh yeah, it's part of it. You know, it's like, well, you use that. And you shift the fear to hyper awareness, and you come to a calm state. You step above the fear, and you go to your mind. You check your parachute. You look at the wind. You go back. I trained for this. You know, I trained for a year for this, and you check everything, and you're good. And as soon as you check everything, you're good. You go. You don't wait. And I remember jumping 1, 2, 3, and I jumped off, and everything. As soon as you jump, you can't think. Like, you're in the most present moment, and it's this most beautiful moment of surrender.
Wow.
And it's like one of the things I attribute the surrender to, and it's not a good example for a lot of people. I'm going to say it anyways. If you've ever seen like in Africa shows where the lion eats the gazelle, and there's a period of surrender.
Yeah.
Where the gazelle actually gives itself to the lion, you know, and it's like, it's this peaceful moment. And if you can get past like, you know, the nature part and watch that happen, it's an actual true surrender to life. And when you jump off, you feel so much, so connected to source and surrender. It's the ultimate tool for self-responsibility, because in base, there's no backup parachute. Nobody's coming to save you. There's no actual rules. There's safety guidelines, but it's rules. It's complete, like you completely rely upon yourself, the way you pack the parachute. You know, in skydiving, it takes 6 or 7 minutes. You have a backup and a lot of altitude. In base, you know, you spend 45 minutes to an hour, you know, creasing and packing your parachute and double checking it, because it's the only one you have. But it's complete responsibility, complete trust, complete accountability. And when you jump, you feel this full surrender and almost this hug from life. And you perform, and I performed. I just, everything came, every my training I performed. And I remember, you know, the parachute opened, clicked, and okay, I got to focus. I landed in the heavy winds, and it was just like, holy fuck, my mind and my fear and everything lied to me so much. And I got to keep that energy. And to my point, that was the first rite of passage, but life is funny. So over the days, we're jumping. Next few days, you know, I got to my ninth jump, and I got this exit 5, exit 6, we jumped over a waterfall, you know, it's getting the rhythm, right? And it wasn't a waterfall when I jumped it, because the water was still falling at the same time as me, but that, it was amazing. And you build up this like courage. And I remember there was a gentleman with 10 years, 10 or 12 years in base. He was there with his fiance, and he jumped, and I watched him go in. His parachute didn't open, and you could hear it hit. And it was a change of energy, and nobody had died there for, I think, the last 12 years. Oh, boy. No, there's been, and bless his soul and his time here. I didn't know him well. I had just met him, but, you know, it changed the entire energy of the whole jump. It was the last day. And to watch somebody die, and what had happened is that there was a little bit of complacency there. See, he had geared up in a wingsuit, and one of his pins was out on his double pin on the parachute, and he quickly took it off to correct it. And then when he put his pilot chute back in, it was looped around, so he couldn't pull his pilot chute, which is the small parachute that pulls out the main parachute under airspeed. That was stuck. So he couldn't pull his parachute, and he fought all the way down. And to see that, to be able to like do a full year and train really, really hard and be able to complete and do that rite of passage, I was meant to see that, right? And I saw somebody doing something I just spent a year doing, get into, die in front of me with a lot of experience. So you can imagine the thoughts. Most people, we had to shut it down for 4 hours. The police came, the helicopters came. I took the helicopter back down. We went in, and my process was like, we got together as our group and we figured out what happened. You know, our teachers came in and said, this is what happened. And at that point, most people stopped jumping for the day, but I knew I couldn't do it. I couldn't leave that place in fear. I couldn't do it because it would affect me my whole life.
Right.
So I, you know, got my gear, and usually we go up as a group, but I took the helicopter up by myself because a lot of people didn't want to go, and I geared up, and I had a lot of fear in me, and I had and it was this empty feeling, and I geared up and I went and I jumped, and everything went good. And I realized like his mistakes weren't mine, but I can learn from his mistakes, and the complacency can happen at any time. But that was one of the biggest rite of passages in my life that I remember. To be able to do that and be able to like harness in like my you know, presence and my groundedness and my logic, and not let my emotions and fear take over, and be able to go up and do that. And I'm glad I did, because that changed my life. Because if I didn't jump after because of fear, I would have carried that until now, and it would have held a lot of things from me.
Well said, man. Powerful story and powerful message and lesson at the end. Yeah, you didn't let that seed germinate, you know, in your garden. You had courage, and despite the fear, you like overrid it and got back in the helicopter and got back up there and did it. And thank God you did. It changed the whole trajectory of your life. So
yeah,
it's a powerful story, man.
Thank you. Yeah. It's something I can tap into. And a lot of the large rite of passage and lessons that we've gone, even the Buffalo story, once we've gone through the rite of passage, we keep them.
Yeah.
We keep
That's the cool part.
Yeah. We keep these treasures. There's treasures and there's gifts and they're embodiments that we get to keep, and we get to also, like, you know, telling the story right now and telling your story and talking about the animals and everything, and even about us going to ayahuasca. And you know, if people can pull from that and pull from our experiences, because I pull from other people's experiences and other stories that we hear of people going through the rite of passage, you know, and there's some tremendous stories that you and I have heard from other people. And I have heard too, that have given me the strength, you know, to learn the lessons of that. And one of the things I did learn, if we move forward, you know, we are supported.
Yes.
You know, the world, or this reality, supports courage. It supports forward momentum. It supports us, you know, moving into that next stage of starting to collapse our probability of where we want to go. We're always supported. And that's, you know, some of the biggest lessons and reminders I get in ayahuasca is, like, you know, if you move into this, you're supported. Everything is always supporting you.
Yes.
Everything is supporting your path. You know, it's us that turn away. It's us that turn away from it.
Yes, I agree. The only way that one can actually fail is to quit. That's the only thing that guarantees an actual failure, is quitting. So it's like, okay, what's the opposite of that? Is just keep going. Just keep moving one foot in front of the other and just find a way forward. And yes, the universal consciousness appreciates that, because it gets to experience, you know, your consciousness gets to experience something new because of it, as opposed to just staying in fear and doing the same old thing, or just staying at home and not doing it. Your consciousness is looking to expand, you know? So by moving forward, you're getting this new energy, and it's a supportive energy. And you know, I would just encourage all the listeners, like, I know it's tough, and there's tough times, but it's just keep moving forward. Just find a way to keep moving forward, and don't quit. Because on the other side of it, there's so many rewards. And yeah, I remember one time too, that just actually came up. It changed my whole trajectory too. I remember one time when I had taken a break from flying airplanes, and I got, you know, stuck in the corporate world and comfort zone, and had some cool jobs. I was managing a nightclub at the time too, which was a lot of fun. And I hadn't been flying in a few years, and my license was coming up for renewal, you know? And I was like, I had a choice. I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to continue on this pilot path. I'm having a lot of fun and I'm making good money, and, you know, and then my dad encouraged me. He was like, yeah, you should, you know, at least renew the license. You never know when it might come in handy one day. And I was like, yeah, okay, you're right. So I got back into the flight training, and I was struggling. You know, it'd been years since I had done it. My skills weren't as sharp. And it was for my instrument rating flying, which, you know, anybody that knows anything about aviation is the toughest part of flying. It's another level. Like, anybody can really get their private pilot license with some effort, but an instrument flyer is a totally different type of pilot. And it was tough, man. I was struggling. And I remember one day, you know, I was flying with this guy who was an amazing instructor, Yvon Robichaud. He was like, they called him like the Wayne Gretzky of pilots. Like, he was a truly, truly remarkable pilot. And he was tough, you know, like, he was a tough coach, a tough instructor. And he was, you know, giving me the gears. And I remember one day I was just like, I wanted to quit, you know, and I called my dad, and I remember the call, and I was like, ah, dad, I don't know if I could do this anymore. It's just tough, man. I don't have it, what it takes anymore. And, you know, God bless my dad. He just does what he always does and just supported my decision. He's like, okay, son, I understand. And, you know, it's no problem. And, you know what's best, and this and this. And, but it just didn't sit right. You know, I remember I went to work at the club that night, and people were asking me how the flight training was going. And then that's where I had the opportunity to tell people I was going to quit and just say, yeah, it's not for me. And I just couldn't get myself to admit that. I was like, no, I that story just doesn't sit well at all. And I'm like, no. And I got back in the airplane, you know, the next day, and I started flying again. And finally things started to click. And long story short, I passed my exam and I got my license back. And thank God I did, because that literally changed my whole life after that. I started flying again for fun. And I got that, you know, my soul was lit up that I was flying again. It always did. And my energy just went, like, I just raised my vibration. I raised my frequency. And then I attracted this job of flying private jets, and took me all over the world again. And I was just riding this new wave, and I got sober, and, you know, I just, and then started a company because of that. And you know, the story goes on and on and on. And then that's here we are today. And that's how you and I met, is through the, you know, years later on companies later. But if I didn't, all this to say, if I just would have quit and just kept working at the nightclub and didn't go flying, there's no way that I'd be here today. There's no way that we'd be business partners, Ryan, or on this podcast. And it was literally just because I refused to quit. I just said, no, I'll just embrace the suck. I'll embrace the process. And yeah, I haven't thought of that in years, but yeah, thank you. That,
tapping back good in.
Yeah.
Tapping back in, man. We have that. And you're reminding me of like my race car driving career. You know, it's very similar. Like it was, I had my first year in the road to Indy, open wheel formula cars. And then I got LASIK eye surgery.
Oh yeah.
It wasn't bad.
I didn't know you had that. I got that too. That's cool.
I mean, I had like minus one.
Okay.
No, not very bad eyes, but like in racing,
that's not bad. Yeah.
You want the edge.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So I was like, okay, I got the doctor on the commercials to do it, like the best guy.
Oh, cool.
You know, and nice. Like I got that done, and what had happened is they messed up my right eye, and I was blurry in my right eye, and I couldn't go back to racing. Wow. And for my next season, and it was a rough ride because I had put a lot of energy and effort into you know, following the path of racing cars. And you know, I went through different identities back then, this like years ago. I went through you know, I'm not a race car driver anymore, I can't drive, I can't do this and this and that. I went to every doctor to try to fix it. I was even wearing these like swim goggles at night because my eyes didn't know when they were dry, so they couldn't tear, so that they would always dry out. I did this for about 10 months and then I finally surrendered to it. I finally said, okay, whatever, I'm good. After I surrendered, I don't know if it was the timing for healing or because I surrendered, my eyes had healed in a week after that. After that, I had got a call to come test a race car in Sonoma, California. I went to test a race car in Sonoma, California. I beat my time by a second, which is huge in formula cars.
After that, I got a call.
Yeah, after that, I got a call to go down into Brazil and race in a FIA Formula 3 and test a car down there. That turned into a 2-year career.
Wow. You
know? So it was like, I don't know if it's the quitting thing, but actually when I quit, things opened up. So,
yeah, you surrendered. What I got from that is you actually surrendered.
Yes.
You surrendered.
When I surrendered to it, yeah, it opened the energy, but it was a lesson, right, of identity. Yeah. And I didn't really know what I knew now. But I mean, that it's funny because that turned into a flying career for you and that turned into a whole new adventure for me. And that's like, I started learning skydiving in between there. I would fly from Canada through LA and then LA to São Paulo to fly. Wow. And I started like sneaking off to the drop zone and jumping and I loved it. And then I'd go to São Paulo and I'd go test on the racetracks and we need a
wow
in between. And then I would drive out to Boitova and I would start jumping there. And I just,
wow.
I was racing cars and I was jumping and all through this and traveling and I was super sharp and it was a time in my life for sure. A lot of lessons, but it's funny how, you know, trajectories can change when you just one choice,
one choice, man.
One, yes. One, you know, surrender or courage or letting, you know,
one
not
code.
Quitting. One code.
One code could change everything.
Opens up a probability, you know,
it's so cool. It's so cool. It is. It's one code can just change your whole perspective. And everything changes because of that. It's so powerful. And, you know, that's why this podcast is called Codes. It's why our, you know, next company will be called Codes. So it's life-changing stuff.
That's a code itself, you know, and it's just like that code comes from, you know, just tapping into those powerful things. And you guess what? You learn these codes through the rite of passage.
Yes.
Right. And the tests. And like you get these codes that completely change a trajectory or a probability that, you know, hasn't happened yet, but it aligns now. It's rewarded. You have to put that new energy somewhere from going through all that work of the rite of passage. And usually that energy coalesces a new beautiful path.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well said. Well said. Well, any closing statements, Ryan? I think that's a pretty powerful way to close it. Anything else you want to add?
No. I think we're good. That was a good one. I really enjoyed that. I actually got to revisit some memories that
Nice.
I can bring the energy back to my life right now.
Beautiful.
Thank you guys so much for listening. If you made it this
Thank
far,
you.
we appreciate all of you joining in. Number eight, it's good. Did that. Enjoy your weekend or week or strong end
Yeah.
or strong day. We can get into the
Yes.
words maybe next time.
Yes. Thank you, Ryan. This was fun, man. I look forward to more, and we'll keep them rolling.
See you guys next week.
See you guys.